Coming up, what an excellent day for...
Why you do this to me, Dimmy? Why?
Why, Dimmy? Why are you making me listen to a podcast about stupid old movie?
And then you no talk about the movie. Why you no talk about the movie? You talk about everything else.
Everything else. You talk about TV show I never see, and you never see. Why?
The TV show happened after our time. Dimmy, why you do the Mario? Why?
Why you swing your arms back and forth?
It's the only way I'm getting through this. It's,
right, exactly, yeah. Right.
Well, howdy, folks, and welcome to Minute 117 of The Exorcist Minute, a show where we endeavor to examine, extrapolate, and excavate The Exorcist, minute by terrifying minute. My name is Lester Ryan Clark.
And I'm Keenan Diaz.
And we'll be your holy guides on this journey through what some have called the scariest movie of all time. Okay, so our minute begins with Dimmy preparing a cloth to dry Regan's forehead.
And it ends with Dimmy breaking down and putting his face in his hands.
Yes, folks. And who can blame him? Remember, we had said that the scenes with Mama Karras were the hardest ones for us to cover. And much like poor Dimmy, in this scene, we are once again surprised into grief by this scene. Surprised by grief. That's C.S. Lewis's sequel. Didn't go over so well. He's surprised by joy, surprised by grief. Yeah. All right, moving on. But no, we're all surprised by grief in this scene. We, the audience, collectively. I don't mean like Keenan and I didn't know this was coming. We'd be pretty shitty exorcist aficionados if can you imagine, Keenan? We open this thing, we're like, wow, what a curveball.
There's demons in here.
Yeah. Just when we thought it couldn't get any worse. Actually, now I'm thinking, what if we had done that from the beginning? Like we were just like perpetually surprised by everything this movie is famous for. Mm-hmm. Like somehow they found the two people in the world who had never seen The Exorcist or any of the pop culture references and gave them a podcast. Actually, I don't know. That could be fun. Like follow the hosts through a movie that you know really well.
Sure.
But they've never seen, right? As long as they keep their promise to only, like, watch 1 minute at a time. Mm-hmm. I'm sure someone is, must be doing that, right? Like podcasts do that with, like, the movie as a whole, right? Like,
right.
They'll have a guest on who's never seen the film or one co-host will have never seen it and you get their reaction on the show. But, like a minute-by-minute one where the hosts have no idea what's coming next. And then, you know, the listener could watch ahead and get the satisfaction of being smarter, or they could, like, follow along completely in the dark as well. I kind of like that, you know? Minute by minute might be a little too much, maybe scene by scene, right? Nobody steal this, by the way. This is trademark. This is patent pending.
I would invest in your show. I just wouldn't want to be on it.
Ah, right.
I wouldn't want to be either watching a movie a minute at a time or over a year and a half, I guess, watching it that way. But yeah, I did watch Back to the Future with my friend Rachel Alterman, who, like, she had seen it, you know, she knew it was, like, oh, it was too, like, she was coming to it too old, right? Like, everyone else had talked about it, and she'd been sort of, you know, pretending at dinner parties her whole life to have seen it, right? But then we watched the end of Act One, you know, and she's never seen this, and then the Libyan terrorists come out and shoot Doc Brown dead.
Right.
And she says, he dies? No. I was like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's lost its meaning to us, right? Because we know he's not dead. But from fresh eyes, it's what? This is the key relationship of this movie.
Oh, to bear witness to that.
Yeah.
To be around when someone experiences something for the first time. Oh, it's magical. Right? Yeah. But yeah, like there's obviously a market for like experiencing a piece of art through other people, right?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we're already part of that, right?
But, yeah, I guess so.
But I saw a TikTok the other day making a commentary about like how Gen X would play video games and millennials like to watch other people play video games on YouTube or Twitch or whatever, right? And now Gen Z watches people watching people play video games.
That's true, though.
Which is so ridiculous. I thought about verifying that before writing this joke.
No. Yeah, they watch people and they're comedians basically as they watch other people play video games.
Yeah. And I was worried. I was like, oh, maybe this is not accurate. But then I was like, wait. No. There ain't no Gen Z listening to our podcast. Two dusty old farts talking about a movie from the late 1900s, as they say.
That's right.
And Gen Z, if you're really out there, please don't be salty. We're not throwing shade. Mm-mm. You're all goats, and that's no cap. Please write in theexorcistminute@gmail.com and tell us how not to be cringe. Mm-hmm. We're not simping. We're just finna get more 5-star reviews. Period.
Yeah, we're just finna get more 5-star reviews. Yeah, that's right, Lester. Yeah. Mm.
And Gen Alpha, if you are out there listening to this, go to bed. You got school tomorrow. What are you doing? Okay. Anyway. Let's get back to the top. It's always these ones that like we don't want to talk about. Right?
Oh, all the mother ones for sure.
Yeah. So let's keep not talking about it as we open our books and our hearts. It is time for a reading from the Book of Blatty. Karis took a deep breath and re-entered the bedroom. Felt the cold, smelled the stench. He walked slowly to the bedside, Reagan asleep. At last. And at last, Karis thought, he could rest. He reached down, gripped Reagan's thin wrist, and then, lifting his other arm, he stared at the sweep second hand of his watch.
Why you do this to me, Dimmy?
The Jesuit's heart froze over.
Why you do this?
Karis did not move, did not breathe, did not dare glance over to that sorrowful voice to see whether those eyes were really there, eyes accusing, eyes lonely, his mother's.
You leave me to be priest, Dimmy. Send me institution.
Don't look.
Now you chase me away?
It's not her.
Why you do this?
His head throbbing, his heart in his throat, Karis shut his eyes tightly as the voice grew imploring, grew frightened and fearful.
You always good boy, Dimmy. Please, I am afraid. Please not chase me outside, Dimmy. Please.
You're not my mother.
Outside nothing, only dark, Dimmy. Lonely, lonely.
You're not my mother, Karis vehemently whispered.
Dimmy, please.
You're not my mother!
Karis shouted in agony. Do for heaven's sake, Karis. The Dennings personality had appeared.
Look, it simply isn't fair to drive us out of here, it wheedled. Look now, speaking for myself, it's only justice I should be here. I admit it, but the bitch destroyed my body. And I think it only right that I ought to be allowed to stay in hers, don't you think? Oh, for Christ's sakes, look at me, Karis, now, would you? Come along, I mean, it isn't very often I get to speak my piece. Just turn around now, I won't bite you, or spew vomit or anything else of that boorish sort. This is me now.
Karis opened his eyes and saw the Dennings personality.
There, that's better, it continued. Look, she killed me, not our innkeeper, Karis. She. Oh, yes, indeed.
It was nodding affirmation.
She. I was minding my business at the bar, you see, when I thought I heard her moaning from upstairs in her bedroom. Well, now I had to see what ailed her after all, so up I went, and don't you know, she bloody took me by the throat, the little cunt. The voice was whiny now, pathetic. Christ, I've never in my life seen such strength. Began screaming that I was diddling her mother or some such, or that I caused the divorce. It wasn't clear, but I tell you, love, she pushed me out the bloody fucking window. The voice cracking now and high-pitched. She fucking killed me, all right? Now, you think it bloody fair to throw me out of her? I mean, really, Karis, do you?
Karis swallowed, then spoke hoarsely. Well, if you're really Burke Dennings,
I keep telling you I am. Are you cunting deaf?
Well, if you are, then tell me, how did your head get turned around? Bloody Jesuit, it cursed beneath its breath. What was that? It shifted its gaze around evasively.
Oh, well, the head thing. Freaky thing, that. Yes, very freaky.
How did it happen? It turned away.
Oh, well, frankly, who gives a good goddamn? Front or back, it's all sixes and sevens, you know. Twiddles and twaddles.
Looking down, Karis picked up Reagan's wrist again and glanced at his watch as he counted her pulse rate.
Dimmy, please. Please no make me be all alone.
His mother.
If instead of be priest, you was doctor. I live in nice house, Dimmy. Not with the cockroach. Not all by myself in the lousy apartment.
His eyes on his watch. Karis strained to block it all out. Once again, he heard the sound of weeping.
Dimmy, please.
You're not my mother. Oh, won't you face the truth?
It was the demon, seething.
You believe what Merrin tells you, you fool? You believe him to be holy and good? Well, he is not. He is proud and unworthy. I will prove it to you, Karis. I will prove it by killing the piglet. She will die, and neither you nor Merrin's god will save her. She will die from Merrin's pride and your incompetence. Bungler, you should not have given her the Librium.
Stunned, Karis looked up into eyes that were shining with triumph and with piercing spite. Then looked down at his wristwatch again.
Noticing her pulse, are we, Karis? Are we?
Karis frowned worriedly. The pulse beat was rapid and
feeble, croaked the demon. Ah, yes. For the moment, just a bit, just a trifle.
Karis let go of Reagan's wrist, fetched his medical bag hurriedly to the bedside, plucked out a stethoscope, and pressed the resonator to Reagan's chest as the demon rasped,
"Listen, Karis. Listen well."
Karis listened and grew even more concerned. Reagan's heart tones sounded distant and inefficient.
"I will not let her sleep."
Chilled, Karis flicked his glance up to the demon.
"Yes, Karis," it croaked. "She will not sleep. Do you hear? I will not let the piglet sleep."
As the demon put its head back in gloating laughter, Karis stared numbly. He did not hear Merrin come back into the room until the exorcist was standing beside him and intently and worriedly studying Reagan's face. "What is it?" Merrin asked. "The demon," Karis answered him dully. "It said it wouldn't let her sleep." He turned a vanquished stare up to Merrin. "Her heart's begun to work inefficiently, Father. If she doesn't get rest pretty soon, she'll die of cardiac exhaustion." Merrin frowned, his expression grave. "Can't you give her drugs?" he asked. "Some medicine to make her sleep?" "No, that's dangerous. She might go into coma." Karis turned his gaze to Reagan. She was clucking like a hen in a barnyard. "If her blood pressure drops any more..." The priest's voice trailed off. Whew, and there we go. So, again, a little different from what we got in the book. We got a much more colorful cast of characters in this room, for one thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do we think? What do we think of this version of things?
Well, yeah, I was going to ask you so the same thing. Like, what does it gain, or you know, how is it different by having the Dennings version in there with this? And the movie, it's so condensed, right? And it's just on the mother.
Right.
So in the novel, they have the opportunity to give him sort of emotional whiplash, I guess, of like Mother Dennings, Mother Dennings. What do you make of that?
Well, firstly, let me say, I totally get why this isn't in the movie.
Uh-huh.
I kind of am so used to it being in the book that I kind of just take it as is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really good explanation that you just put forth about kind of giving Dimmy emotional whiplash, right? Mm-hmm. It makes me think how I've been like sort of appreciating Book Howdy's like puckishness and his snarkiness and his kind of like beetle juiciness, you know, when it comes to being humorous and you know, cracking jokes.
Mm-hmm.
But this right here is an indicator that even when he's being jokey, it's to be mean.
Yeah.
It's specifically to hurt somebody. It's not the prankster that I have in my head, mm-hmm. you know? But as to why have Burke there, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It does kind of muddy this final act up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the mother voice, yes, like, absolutely, we need that, but...
It's interesting in the book, right? The idea of Dennings coming forward and, like, pretending, because it's Howdy, right?
Right.
But pretending to let slip clues about this murder so that so that Karis is, like, playing detective here.
Mm-hmm,
But, you know, Howdy knows what he's doing, I suppose, and Damien's sort of falling into this trap of taking the demon, this Dennings version's, like, coyness, like, oh, no, I didn't mean to say that. Don't think about that, right?
Right.
And Karis is like, no, it is. But that's all a trap that the demon's laying out.
Yeah.
But I guess in the movie, correct me if I'm wrong, does the Dennings demon talk to Karis? That's more...
No.
It makes sense why he's talking to Chris, right, and bothering Chris with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a perfect, like, because it's Chris's best friend.
Right.
And Reagan was the one, or like Howdy in Reagan's body, you know, was responsible for Dennings' death. So that's perfect.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's a little at cross purposes, I suppose. If the Mary Karis demon were talking to Chris might still be disturbed by it, but it wouldn't be as condensed and, you know, neat thematically.
Do you know what she did? Why she do that?
I don't. Who are you?
No, I thought you were my son. I still no understand this. Hello, hello. Okay, I go away.
No, it's okay. It's okay. You just have to press the button on the receiver.
This one? No.
No. At the top of
the
receiver.
Hello.
Where,
is it?
No, where you hang it up?
I think it is off now. Okay.
No.
I will.
Ma'am.
And Reagan's head is just like still around, and you just hear Mama Karis just putzing around the house.
Right,
you know.
Right.
Like, I don't know why. I just.
Yeah, she's singing Greek songs. Right? If I knew you was coming, I would bake a cake. I'll bake a cake. Bake a cake.
Yep.
Yeah, it's just neater when they have their own sort of, you know, haunted by their own demons, possessed by their own guilt and their own demons here and not other people's demons.
Yeah, that's the, you know, like in the book Wizard of Oz, like the wizard takes on the form of, you know, something that personally affects each of the characters, right? For the Tin Man, it's one thing. For the Scarecrow, it's another thing. For Dorothy, it's another thing, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. What is Dennings talking to Dimmy for?
Yeah. At least Dimmy knows who Dennings was. He saw him and you know, it's been a murder or whatever, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The only thing I can think of is Howdy is still trying to sow doubt within Karis's mind about whether or not this is just like a delusional girl.
Uh-huh, right.
And so he's acting like if Reagan were faking, she would still do the whole, like, switching from one voice to another, and I can do this voice now, and I can do this voice, and I can do this voice, right? And folks, there is a part, it sort of breaks up this whole battle at the end here, but they call in a specialist, this other doctor, and he comes in, and he's checking up on Reagan and seeing how she's doing. And the Dennings personality is talking to that guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's like right on the edge of spilling the beans about Reagan having killed somebody and just like teasing everybody with that.
See, I hadn't thought about it, but you're right. Like, so that might be sowing doubt and being like, look, I'm, you know, maybe not faking it, but if I am a girl going through a psychotic break after killing somebody, that might be how I reveal it and confess it, as opposed to Reagan saying, I killed my mother's best friend, who I thought was sleeping with my mother, she might manifest this Burke demon in order to
right.
So that's like more textbook case study, right? Of like this is what this would all be about,
right. But I think we're beyond that at this point, right? Like, I mean, in the movie, we're like Dimmy is already like fully on board. He believes this is a demon,
yep.
And for him to ask the Dennings character, like, oh, how did Burke's head get all the way around? What are you doing, Dimmy? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, it's Howdy. It doesn't matter how his head, like, you're, like, we're back to square one. You're trying to figure out, oh, maybe it could have happened in the fall. Maybe, no. Mm-hmm. No, why are we doing this? Why you do this, Dimmy?
Well, better than talking to his mother. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, right? But I think in trying to be lighter, like with this, you know, with this cavalcade of characters, mm-hmm. you know, running through Reagan's head, it makes it a little bit scarier in the book, mm-hmm. just knowing that Howdy is using humor to be cruel, and then also there's still a little bit of doubt in Dimmy's mind that he has to actually, like, oh, great, you know, the Dennings personality is back. Maybe I can get the Dennings personality to admit that he doesn't know how the head got turned around and then prove this whole thing false. No, what do you know?
Right.
That's done. We're done with that. Yeah. But yeah. I mean, one of those moments that I appreciate the clean, streamlined version of the movie, I think.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. And you have just the one challenge of Dimmy's mom,
right.
versus yeah, Burke being in there. Right? Yeah. Anyway, bye, Burke. Okay, but anyway, let's get back to the top of this minute in
Do
the movie.
Do we have to?
I mean,
can't we just finish?
we made a solemn promise to examine, extrapolate, and excavate.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. We signed that contract in blood.
In blood.
Yeah.
Not our blood, but yeah.
No. Wow, no. Who would do that? No. Okay, so in our movie, Dimmy had just sat down on the bed beside Reagan, who is shivering and sweating at the same time. Remember, in the previous minute, he had just had a vision of his mother on that bed. And I can't remember if we had talked about it in the previous minute, but I like how this Dimmy, end of the movie Dimmy, is able, at least somewhat, to break through that illusion and focus on saving this girl. I don't know if beginning of the movie Dimmy would have been able to brush that aside.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do you think, Keenan? Like we tend to see this minute as a moment of weakness, but we've also seen Dimmy grow throughout the movie and then exponentially just in this final room.
Mm-hmm.
And so despite his reaction at the end of this minute, I feel like he is stronger now. And it could have been much worse. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm thinking about, you know, he's getting thrown around by this earthquake and he's still like, okay, I got to get up, but I got to go get that yellow blanket for this girl who's shivering, right? Like,
right.
Like to put that aside, put away his pain, his physical pain. I don't know about his mental pain. If he's not all the way there, I think, obviously.
Mm.
Something about him going in here by himself is wrong by itself,
yeah.
Right? And geez, so is that a selfish move on his own? What does he hope to happen here? Is he being selfish by going in by himself? Like, I want to be the hero and it needs to be me doing this or what? Is he being selfless? If we only had two options, if it was a poll,
right.
Is he being selfish? You know, I'm going
to
go and do this and save the girl and fight my demons, or selfless, you know, Marin isn't up to it. I'm going to go get started without him.
Mm-hmm. Well, what is he? Okay, if he's being selfish, what does he intend to gain by going in there by himself?
He's gonna go and he's gonna face this demon and work on his own shit rather than working on Reagan's shit.
I don't think he wants to work on his own shit.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna say it's a selfless move to go
All
back
right.
in there alone, because I think hearing his mama talk is mm-hmm. the last thing he wanted.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think he goes in there. I think Marin's been in that bathroom for a while,
mm-hmm.
and he's like, oh, geez, like the last time I took her vitals, they were pretty bad.
Right.
And now she's alone in there. I need to go check just in case Marin takes a little bit longer, just in case Marin needs a little bit more time.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just go in there and see like how she's doing physically.
Right. And then he gets in there and it's the mother and this hallucination.
Right.
And he doesn't leave. He works through it. So I think that's what you're saying. He works through it to go check on her. Yeah.
Right. He doesn't like it. Doesn't scare him away.
Mm-hmm.
And he also doesn't like move toward it and like, I don't know, entertain this fantasy. Mm-hmm. Right. He's like, no, that's not real. I came here to check on Reagan and that's what I'm going to do. So he moves from the foot of the bed to the head of the bed again. Like seems like it takes forever.
Mm-hmm.
And then he sees Reagan and he's checking on her and then he gets this nasty surprise.
Right.
But yeah, we're not there yet. We'll get to that.
Right.
First thing that happens, though, he picks up the cloth, folds it, and he begins to dab Reagan's forehead. Mm-hmm. Now, up to this point, Reagan has been staring straight up at the ceiling, staring at nothing. We speculated whether this was Reagan or Howdy with this look of distress on their face. Either way, we got another character staring into the abyss.
Mm-hmm.
So that theme is back. Characters looking really hard at nothing. But now, as Dimmy dabs her forehead with the cloth, Reagan shifts her gaze to look at him, and in his mother's voice says, "Dimmy, why you do this to me?"
Mm.
And folks, this lip syncing is absolutely seamless.
Mm-hmm.
We know that Mercedes McCambridge redid the lines to match Linda's performance after the fact. There's some raw audio. I can't remember if I posted it in the listener group. If not, I'll post it for this episode. But the first part of that video is a side-by-side comparison where you hear Linda deliver the line and then Mercedes McCambridge does her best to match the exact delivery. But then the second half of the video is Mercedes playing with the lines, like really living in them and making them her own, which she would have done before matching Linda's delivery.
Mm-hmm.
So the YouTube video is, I think, like swapped. I think the second half comes first.
Okay.
And I feel like we should know this. Like, if anyone can confirm, please write in. But I think that's how it went. They each worked on the lines separately with their own process, and mm-hmm. then Billy showed Mercedes, like, okay, this is how Linda does it in the film. Can you, you know, take the work that you've done and match it to her rhythm?
Mm-hmm.
Is I'm guessing how that went down.
Yeah, I would guess so, because Mercedes McCambridge was a professional voice actor. She was a radio actor, a pioneering radio actor. That's what I would assume.
But there would also have been moments where it was like the other way around. Maybe mm-hmm. Billy's like, oh, there's this thing that Mercedes does for this line that's really good. Linda, can you try to sync up with that?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it was a process, like maybe back and forth, right? I wish I knew. I feel foolish for not knowing.
Yeah,
folks, if anybody knows, like, let us know.
Yeah, but they could play... They could be playing Mercedes' tapes for Linda, you're right, and vice versa.
Yeah.
You know, things. Yeah,
yeah, it could be either way. Mm-hmm. In any case, I wanted to say that this scene
mm-hmm.
with Howdy speaking in Mama Karis's voice, I can only imagine this has to be Vasiliki Malieros reading the lines first.
Mm-hmm.
And Linda Blair working to match that, because Linda's had acting experience and Vasiliki has not.
Yeah.
I can't imagine forcing this poor old lady to do ADR to match Linda's lips. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. So she had acting experience, but in Greece, in plays. So sometimes you'll see these sources that say, I've seen both sources, some that mm-hmm. said she has no acting experience and some that, you know, Billy Friedkin saw her at a diner she worked at.
Right, like a diner, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Or, you know, not a diner she worked at, but just at a diner. And then,
right.
So that's true. You know, I have no reason to doubt that. So he was like, oh, this woman, like he did with Vinnie Russell or any of these priests, right? He's like, let's put them in there, Paul Bateson and the other radiologist. Right. So I'm of two minds of it. Right. So she did some theater experience. She did have mm-hmm. some she was not a professional actor at this point. And Friedkin saw her and didn't know her background. And you know, he just liked the way that she looked. Right.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So either way, she does not have ADR experience,
right.
Like automated dialogue replacement or
that's
looping experience.
Animal. Oh, that's a whole other bottle of wax.
Yeah. Yeah, trying to describe that to people who haven't done it is so difficult. And yeah, unless you've done it yourself, I don't think you can really understand how crazy it is.
think of how, like, you know, it's even different from voice acting because, mm-hmm. like, you know, with voice acting, you know, you do the lines and then the animators, you know, try to match mm-hmm. your energy.
Right. The opposite, like, of what happens at the beginning of Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all wrong.
It is, like, anybody who knows anything about voice acting, you look at the first couple minutes of Mrs. Doubtfire, like, right. They're doing this all backwards.
Right. This is gonna. Yeah. This is costs hundreds of thousands of dollars more than yeah. than just doing it the other way.
Yeah. But, like, speaking of that, so that is how you do it with films brought over yep. from overseas, like
yep.
like anime, when you dub anime mm-hmm. or other things from other countries that aren't originally English, it's right. like, well, you know, they did their work. They did, you know, the actors read it and, you know, then the animators animated it mm-hmm. and then you bring it over to you. They're not going to animate it all over again, right? right? Mm-hmm. You have to match, you know, the lip flaps. So it's a special kind of skill mm-hmm. where you have to act, you have to communicate emotion, but then on a timer.
Right, exactly.
You have to do it in the exact rhythm that, you know, the animated mouth is already speaking.
Yeah, more like a dance, you know, like an acting yes. equivalent, of voice acting equivalent of dance, yeah.
Yeah, that is really tough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so she did have some acting experience, it seems like, but certainly not, you know, I don't want to diminish that acting experience, but mm-hmm. not that it would help her in this case with the ADR or any of those stuff. And, right, and probably wouldn't right. have helped her even with camera, because it was probably decades beforehand. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but she's so good. She dies in February 9th. So Jack McGowan dies of January 1973.
Right.
And then Vasiliki.
Who played Burke.
Yes. Yeah, thanks. Yeah. So then Vasiliki Martiaros dies in February. So both of them died during production, but after right. the time that they had filmed everything of theirs. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, McGowan had big acclaim, but maybe Meliodas would have been in other movies, you know, later mm-hmm. on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's not to diminish Vasiliki's performance again, folks. Like, mm-hmm. this is one of the hardest scenes for me. Her delivery is so heartbreaking. And my guess is that's because she was allowed to do it her own way, right? Mm-hmm. And I think in this instance, Billy gave the more technical challenge to Linda, because he knew that she could handle it, the lip syncing.
Yeah, that's what I would guess too.
Yeah. But yeah, again, folks, if we misspeak about any of this stuff, please write in and educate us so, you know, we're not just talking out of our asses.
More so than usual.
I mean, yeah, exactly. Right. But yeah, I also love Jason Miller's reaction. As soon as he hears the word Dimi, right, you see him freeze. Mm-hmm. And then just watch him process it as the rest of the line plays out. It's very subtle, but he does a great job at making us believe he is hearing this for the first time and being surprised by it and disturbed by it. He stops dabbing Reagan's forehead. And we mentioned it in the last minute, folks. While mm-hmm. all of this is going on, you can hear two things in the background. One is Captain Howdy growling.
Mm-hmm. Right?
The other is voices from Bellevue.
Yeah.
Where Mama Karis first said, "Why you did this to me, Dimi?" Right? When Dimi comes to see her. Also in that scene were other patients, all women, in various states of mental, emotional distress, crying or babbling or moaning like lost, trapped souls. And right here, right as Dimi realizes it's his mother's voice, another woman's voice in the background laughs in this very cruel but also unhinged way. Mm. And I love how it happens right here, as if the laugh is in response to Dimmy's distress rather than echoes of a memory playing out. Because that's what I thought up to this point. I thought either Howdy is projecting or Dimi is remembering the sound of the patient's voices. But now, with this laugh, it's mm-hmm. like the voices are conscious of Dimi in this moment, and they're laughing at him. And that to me is really disturbing. That's that it's from the past, but it's aware of the present. It's like if a tape recording started talking to you.
Yeah.
Or like the people on the TV stop acting and just look at you.
Right.
Right. That's always creeped me out. And with this scene, it's even worse because you can't be sure. It could just be that in the background, this lady is laughing at something else.
Mm-hmm.
But it happens right here, and so now we're left wondering, like, who is actually in here with us? We sometimes think of memories as ghosts, and we say that a memory haunts us, and this is turning that into a literal thing. Yeah, what do you think?
That is creepy. Like, you know, we always... It's a very old, I think, idea of like the painting's eyes looking at you, right?
Right. Yeah.
and you swear it out of the corner of your eyes, but yeah, if you confirmed it, yeah. Uh-huh. Oh boy, yeah. So yeah, memories haunting us, guilt mm-hmm. possessing us. Yeah, I think that's all happening in this movie.
Right.
But again, that just speaks to this quality of this sound work. You know, this is. Really, really a step forward in sound design.
Yeah. No. Now, Keenan, I can't remember if we talked on mic or off mic last episode, but you were wondering whether all of these extra voices were also Mama Karras or other patients in Bellevue.
Yeah, they remind me like other voices in Bellevue, but they're sort
That's
of swirling
thought, yeah.
all around you. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. But then even when you hear before, when we see Mama Karras and she's not speaking, but we hear her voice.
Right.
Yeah, even then what they're doing with the sound is interesting. It's in stereo and it seems like her voice is coming from all around Damien.
Right, yeah, yeah. Oof, yeah, good. Yeah.
Don't like it.
Mm-mm-mm. Not one bit. Yeah. Okay, so next, Howdy says in Mama Karras' voice, "Please, Dimmy, I'm afraid." And at this point, Dimmy has completely frozen. After a moment, he says, quietly, calmly, almost as if to himself, "You're not my mother." Another pause, and then very quickly, almost desperately, he turns away to grab the stethoscope. He jams it into his ears as she says, "Dimmy, please." And I love how like aggressively he jams the earpieces in his own ears, right? And how this could be, you know, out of urgency for Regan's condition, right? He's got to hurry up. But also he just wants to get away from that voice, you know, and so he's jamming the earpieces in.
Yeah. Right?
He turns back. He's Dr. Karras. Checking on a patient, right? Mm-hmm. That's all this is. Dr. Karras, not Dimmy. There's no Dimmy here. You're wrong. I'm Dr. Karras. Leave me alone. We hear more growling from Howdy, and we cut. Wait. I can't operate on this girl because she's my mother. I was like, there's something there. How do I? And a voice in my head was like, don't pass this up.
I really thought you were I thought, oh God, something's gone with his equipment. Something's going on. Or he's having some kind of physical event.
Yeah.
Right.
<Okay. laughs> Thanks for coming along with me on that, folks. That wasn't even like the payoff wasn't even that great.
No, that's great.
But yeah, so we hear more growling from Howdy, and then we cut to a close-up of Dimmy as he listens, concerned, to Reagan's heart. And behind him, out of focus, we see Father Marin re-entering the bedroom. We see this, but I don't think Dimmy is aware of it.
Yeah, I think he's too focused on... The only indication would be from the sound, which, as you say, he's tried to completely mask out of him.
Right, yeah. Now, we cut again. It's a close-up on Howdy slash Reagan over Dimmy's shoulder. And still, her face has this plaintive, fearful look. And also, we could say, saintly?
Mm-hmm.
Like in those depictions of the martyrs who are suffering and looking up to the heavens, right? Her eyes are looking upward again, right? This could be another instance of Reagan adopting Christ-like imagery, right? This looks like, you know, my God, why have you forsaken? Dimmy, why have you forsaken me?
Right, exactly. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's also looks so she's, you know, totally ripped up. Her face is all scarred and she's blue and purple and green and gross. But she also seems to, you know, in one of the few times when she's in this position, like accede to him, like, hey, you're doing your examination the way a sick child might, right? Like, this is uncomfortable, right? Like we've seen with when she was Reagan back, you know, getting these angiograms and stuff. And like, like, okay, this is terrible. I'm in a lot of pain, but yes, please do that because you can help me, which, you know, is a howdy trick, right? It's like, okay, you're the doctor. And then, because then it's going to be in the second, right? Like, you're the doctor and you're going to lose a patient.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now, right, speaking of that, we can see alarm in Dimmy's frantic movements, right? We cut back to our first shot as he desperately tries to read Reagan's heartbeat. And it's just like the motion of his hand as he's, you know, moving around the stethoscope. And it's just so frantic, right? He's trying to get a read. And her chest is going up and down with unnatural quickness as she takes these shallow breaths. And after a moment, Dimmy takes out the earpieces and stares in alarm at her face. And Linda Blair is looking at him with this incredibly sad and scary expression that looks like she is dying.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like Howdy is gone and Reagan is looking at Dimmy as the life drains from her eyes. It is really hard to look at.
Yeah, so we cut from a shot over Damien's shoulder onto her, where it is like you're saying, she's a saint. She's allowing herself to be examined. She's like suffering in a martyr sort of way.
Right.
And then in the two shot, when we cut back out to them, that's where Damien starts to, oh God, I'm losing her heartbeat.
Right.
And he's reaching around, and it feels like because of the cut and because of this movement, it feels like she's only starting to breathe heavier and worry because he's starting to freak out, you know, when it's like, okay, the doctor's coming to examine me. He's like, here I go here. And then you see, I mean, imagine that if you were being treated by a doctor and the doctor was like, oh shit, I can't find her heartbeat.
Right.
You know, that just makes you start to react and start to panic.
I don't even need a doctor for that. That's how, no, I mean, like, I don't know, like I'm opening this as a joke, but it's you know, like when it's happening, it's not funny. But like that was my first panic attack, was trying to feel my pulse and being like, where is it?
Right.
And then it's like, well, it's there.
It's there.
Dummy, it's probably there.
Right.
Like, but then I'm like, but it's not. Mm-hmm. I can't feel it. And yeah, that was the start of it all.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And like, I'm sure if, you know, like I go to the, you know, the hospital or, you know, I'm in the emergency room and have we mentioned this on the show about me being in the ER recently?
I don't think so on the show.
Okay. Should we? Is this like good radio?
Yeah, sure.
Is
it's good radio. You know?
Okay. But I mean, yeah, like I was in the ER recently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Keenan and Ian know about it. I sent them pictures from my bed after I was, you know, much better and just felt like a silly goose.
Right.
But yeah, there was like I was driving home and I had this what must have been a panic attack.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like pulled over side of the road and got out and sat down to like rest and like make it so that my heartbeat would regulate again.
Mm-hmm.
But just doing that, just acknowledging that I need to pull over, like the act of pulling over is like, well, something must be wrong.
Right.
Because you did that. You wouldn't do that if this was just a panic attack. So something must be wrong. Mm-hmm. Right. And then, you know, this lady passes me, she's walking some dogs and she's like, are you okay? And I'm like, God, universe, stop telling me that I'm not okay. And I'm like, I'm fine. And then I realize I try to say I'm fine and I can't open my jaw.
Mm.
And when I turn, like, it feels like I'm falling, you know, down a long, you know, hallway. And I'm like, well, that's never happened in my panic attacks before. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, she calls the ambulance. They take me, and like on the ambulance, you know, they check, you know, they hook me up to the EKG, and spoiler alert, guys, everything's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm still here. Like, Keenan's not doing a podcast with a ghost. or is he?
I'm haunted by Lester.
Yeah. No. But no, everything's fine. And yeah, as soon as they hooked me up, they were like, oh yeah, you're fine. You know, like there's your heartbeat and everything. And, you know, it's like, wow, you're in better shape than this. Like, they joked. It was like, you're in better shape than this guy. Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. One of the EMTs.
He's their measuring stick at that hospital. They bring him to every examination.
Yeah. But like, I tell you, Keenan, if they had checked and they were like, I can't, like, even jokingly, I can't find his heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be dead.
Right.
That'd be it. That'd be enough to send me over the edge.
Right.
Right.
There is some form of a psychiatric break that people have had where they go into the hospital and they say they have died.
What?
Have you heard about this yet?
No.
Let me see. There's probably a name for it. Patients who...
And you're not talking about like near-death experiences.
No. Okay, there we go.
Okay.
Cotard syndrome.
Huh.
Yes. So they call it a deluge. Cotard's delusion is how they used to say it, right? A mental disorder in which the affected person holds the delusional belief that they are dead or don't exist or are rotting or have lost their organs and et cetera. Yeah. And then, yeah, how do you explain that to the doctor? I mean, that's how they get reported. That's how, you know, they go in and say, yeah, doctor, I'm dead. So now what are you going to do about it?
Wow.
And like a panic attack, right? Uh-huh. The doctor's saying like, no, you're not. Here's the EKG. Like, that doesn't necessarily help. You have to sort of make your way through whatever you're going through on your own.
Yeah. It's like, doctor, I don't think you heard me.
right.
And I don't think like any EKG reading is going to matter when a dead person is talking to you.
Exactly. Yeah.
If I can Lazarus my way over to this hospital.
Right.
I don't like what faith are you putting in those readings right now?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on.
Ugh. Yeah. Oh, Jesus. Well, while you're sitting on that real disorder, I just clicked on see also.
Oh, no.
Capgras.
That's never a good thing.
Capgras delusion, Capgras, a psychiatric disorder in which a person holds a delusion that a friend, spouse, parent, or other close person has been replaced by an identical imposter, and they're the only one who knows that they're an imposter.
Oh, I've heard of that.
That sounds awful as well.
Yes. Oh, my God.
Yeah, what do you do? I mean, yeah. In the disorder, you know that you're the only one, and that's why you're reporting it, is because no one else can see that they're not the person anymore.
Those are it's the worst because it can't be proven,
right,
or disproven,
right?
Oh,
jeez.
Ugh.
All right. See also the Fregoli delusion.
Why you do this to me, Keenan?
In which a person holds a delusional belief that different people are, in fact, a single person who changes appearances.
Ooh.
I haven't heard of this one before, but that sounds terrible.
Yeah.
Just like, no, the nurse from before is the same as you now. You're that nurse from before.
Oh, wow.
And you're that cop who was bothering me, and you're my landlord, and everyone has it against me, and you're all the same person. Ooh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Wipe my hands of that.
Yeah.
It's very just easier not to think about it.
I mean, like, you brought it up, and now it's like...
No, I didn't. That was the guy before.
Oh, that's right.
That's so terrible. Oh, God.
I forgot. Yes, because you're dead.
No. You're dead.
Oh, did
it? That's right. Jesus. Ugh. I forget why we're looking at all of this.
But, I don't know.
Oh, because, yeah, Reagan is freaking out. Right. Reagan, you know, again, we don't know how much of it is play acting on Howdy's point, but like, as Karis starts to freak out that Reagan is dying, then Reagan is just more convinced that she's dying, right?
Yeah. Oof. Don't like it. Do not like it.
No.
Yeah. But, yeah, so just then, we hear Marin say, "What is it?"
Mm-hmm.
And Karis turns, he's startled, and the camera begins to follow him, But then we cut, and we are now over Marin's shoulder, looking down at Reagan and Dimmy, who looks very small.
Yeah.
He's mostly in shadow, just a sliver of white light on his face, which thins to barely a thread as he turns and looks down and says, "Her heart." I don't know why, but it feels also like Dimmy is talking to God.
Yeah.
Like maybe Marin's silhouette is so big and it's looking down at him, like breathing these clouds of vapor. It's like Dimmy is finally facing God and saying, "I failed."
Mm-hmm. All right. You got your faith back that God exists just in time to have that.
Just
revelation.
In time. It's like to realize he's not worthy. Ugh.
Right.
Yeah. We then cut to a close-up of Marin, and this never fails to make my heart sink when he says, "Can you give her something?" With this look of concern bordering on desperation, the fact that Marin is more lost and in the dark than Dimmy is so disheartening. It's another instance of seeing your father as a regular human. But it's different here because he's once again in full possession of his faculties. It's not like before where, you know, you're witnessing a moment of senility where you can sort of be like, "Oh, that's not him. He's not fully himself," right? Here, he is sharp and aware and also at a loss.
Yeah.
Can you give her something? Like, just the fact that he asks that, like he doesn't know as much about medicine as Dimmy. And yes, of course, like Dimmy would be more knowledgeable of that stuff, but I think unconsciously I just expected Marin to know everything Dimmy knows and more. And like having him have this blind spot is really effective in how it just makes it, it just takes the wind out of your sails. Like, oh man, we really are lost.
Well, yeah, a couple things about that. He has been downplaying Damien's insistence on medicine in order to get Damien ready for the exorcist, right? We have those scenes that are like, "No, stop being a doctor for a while. We need you to be a priest," right?
Right.
And now we need a doctor. And he, you know, he's recognizing that he needs that part of Damien, but Damien is saying that it's that part's failing him. Right.
Right.
Like, yeah. Yeah. So when finally, you know, they've gone through a first ordeal, they've done the power of Christ compels you. They've survived these earthquakes. Right.
Right.
They've done all of that. They've had that moment. That's a heart to heart outside.
Right.
And so now Marin might be able to, you know, let Damien as the doctor speak, Dr.
Right.
Karras. But
yeah.
Now Dr. Karras is not being useful, right? He's failing at this, right?
Right. Or he's too late. Yeah.
Yeah, he's too late. That's a good way of putting it. And I was thinking about this, you know, as we mentioned, it's her heart, and Marin is a heart patient, and
right,
and can sympathize. He already would have because he's Christ-like, right? He already would sympathize with her, but now it's like, oh gosh, another patient going through something like what I go through,
right?
And I wonder if he's even like, you know, could you give her something like, you know, I have a case of nitroglycerin,
right,
you know,
yeah.
Is that what you need? And that would be so great if I could, but no, it turns out no.
Right.
That's not going to help.
Yeah. And I think it's different. I think Marin's heart is going too fast and too hard.
I think so. Right.
And her heart is going too slowly or too weakly.
Right.
So actually giving her that stuff would be terrible.
Right. But I think somewhere in the back, it's like, you know, oh God, can you give her something? And Damien say, well, geez, yes, but I don't have any nitroglycerin, if only. And he would be able to be like, oh, look, I have that here, but that's not the case.
Yeah. No. Yeah. And for the other reason, like as Dimmy says it, you know, in response to Marin's question, we hear Dimmy say she'll go into coma. Right. And we also hear, like, just as we cut, Mama Karras speak up again saying, "Dimmy." And then we cut and we're closer on Dimmy now. And behind him, in his mother's voice, Howdy is speaking in Greek. Now, I searched around. And while there are tons of articles and videos and websites translating all the stuff in the Le Plume de ma Tante scene, there appears to be nothing on this dialogue, and I almost gave up when I found this scene on YouTube, with some comments below. And several people, not just one, several people who understood Greek said that what she is saying here is, you are very tired. You should go to bed. It's a very different from what she says in the book. You know, it's like, oh, you know, if you were a doctor, right, you leave me with the cockroaches and da-da-da, right? So it's different from there, right? She sort of lays a guilt trip on him in the book. And she implies that the exorcism will be like the thing that banishes her to the darkness.
Yes.
So she will be sent to hell by Dimmy's own hand.
Right.
Right. And so the why you do this to me is not just a recall. It's a continuation. It's like, why are you torturing me with this exorcism? Why are you trying to send me away? Right. I'm afraid. Outside is nothing, only darkness.
Right.
But here, this is a whole other type of attack, right? You're very tired. You should go to bed. Is probably something his mother actually said to him when she was alive. And to me, that's worse. Like, Howdy is torturing him with the sound of his mother's care and concern, something he can never hear again.
Right.
And again, folks, watch Jason Miller. Watch the emotion hit him. Watch his face begin to change. Watch him fight it and ultimately lose the struggle. Even before he shouts, Jason Miller is giving us this multi-tiered reaction that grows and evolves on Dimmy's features and finally explodes when he explodes, shouting, "You're not my mother." And I don't know how many takes they did for that, but I can't imagine a better, realer, more heart-wrenching cry. The way that the pitch climbs to this primal, childlike anguish, this is the type of noise you're embarrassed to make in real life, right? It's so vulnerable. It's so raw and revealing. I can see another actor trying to make this shout more authoritative. Like, no, you're not my mother. Like, with the same tone as, like, the power of Christ compels you. Like, regaining control. But here, Dimmy is begging. He is pleading. He has been reduced. This is the most childlike we have seen him in this movie, calling out for his mother, calling out for this thing not to be his mother.
Right. But, you know, he's trying to be that authoritative person. He's trying to be Gandalf the Grey and you shall not pass, right? But he's finding the instant he opens his mouth, realizing that just starting that sentence is failing, right? Just the fact that he had to say something is a sign that Howdy is winning and getting into his brain.
Exactly. Oh, that is a really good comparison. Yeah, like him trying to do the Gandalf thing. It's like, you shall not pass. But like him realizing the frailty of his own body, of his own emotions. His emotions are too strong.
Right.
And his belief in the opposite of what he's saying is too strong for him to adequately say it.
Right? Yeah. He's trying to prove that it's not getting under his skin.
Right.
But the way to prove that it's not getting under your skin is to not even mention that. Like
exactly.
Yeah, the only reason he would say it is because it's really, really bothering him.
Right. It's the protesting too much.
Yes, he is protesting too much. Just the fact that he is engaging in that conversation, which Marin has warned him about, is a sign that the devil is winning or the demon is winning.
Yeah. Now, I've listened to other podcasts where people are criticizing Dimmy here for crumbling in front of the demon like this, which is so weird because we're the ones who have been known to be hard on Dimmy. And yet this scene, I cannot fault him at all. How can you not crumble at this? I am 100% team Dimmy here, and I think that's mainly due to Jason Miller's completely honest and unabashed performance here. What do you think, Keenan?
Yeah, I think that's the only thing that could happen here. He needs to crumble. He needs to fail.
As
much as we anticipate this, and like we said, Lester and I have been doing improv of this scene since college saying this and using this as a joke. When I opened up the file this morning to watch this minute, it made me cry. I mean, just the first time she says that, even though I'm going in knowing that this is the minute where she's going to say that, it just shocked me, and like tears projectile shooting out of my face against my will. I mean, yeah, I don't know how you don't crumble at that.
No. And it's these performances here. It's Vasiliki Maliaros's voice. It's Linda Blair's expressions. Mm-hmm. It's Jason Miller's just deep animal cry. It makes you like those performances. Make you feel like it's your mother's voice,
right?
And that's the thing, and that's how I can sympathize with Karis in this moment.
Yeah, and we're getting towards the end here, so just a reminder in case we forget to bring it up in the rest of our minutes, the Reagan McNeil performance is, what did we count, 5 different people, right?
Yeah.
It's Linda Blair. Right. Eileen Dietz, mm-hmm. the contortionist, who's cut out of the movie, depending on which version you're looking at.
Annie Miles,
yeah. Vasiliki Miliaros and Mercedes McCambridge. So,
is that the fifth one?
Isn't that?
I guess it must be.
Yeah, it's all 5 of them together.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, because that was our speculation was we had caught 4.
Yeah, I would include Vasiliki, especially after looking at this.
Banana. After this one, that's the fifth one. Because we were wondering, who's the fifth? And this is the fifth one. Yeah.
Right, it's 5. I guess you can include McGowan. I'm not sure, again, whether they were playing McGowan for her on the set. But those 5 women, right, go all into this multifaceted performance here. So, it's a whole village of people in there.
Yep. It takes a village to raise a demon.
It takes a village to raise a priest out a window.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Right. It takes a village of people to Dimi. YMCA. Dimi, there is no need to feel down. Mm. I said, Dimi. Pick yourself up off the ground. I said, Dimi, because you're in a new town. There is no need to be unhappy. Dimi, there is a place you can go.
It's hell. She's talking about hell.
I said, Dimi, when you're short on your dough, you can stay there, and I'm sure you will find many ways to suck cocks in hell. It's fun to stay at the Why You Do This To Me, Dimi. Yeah, maybe that's why they had so many characters in the book, right?
Yeah. They had the Native American and the policeman
and the fireman
and the fireman, the construction worker.
Yep. Oh, it's perfect. But yeah, so after this, we hear Father Marin's voice. He says, "Don't listen." And it's as much a wake-up call for us after such a convincing performance, again, by Jason Miller, by Vasiliki Maliaros, by Linda Blair. So when Marin says, "Don't listen," we're also like, right, that's right. This is all fake. Don't listen. And we're right there with Dimi, struggling to hold that in our minds, even as Howdy continues. He says, "Why, Dimi?" We cut, and the last thing we see in this minute is Dimi's anguished face lowering into his hand. And for now, that is all of my notes. Keenan, is there anything else?
No, I think that's it.
All right, folks, this has been another excellent Exorcist Minute. I've been Lester Ryan Clark. You can reach me on all the socials as Lester Ryan Clark.
And I've been Keenan Diaz. You can find me on Instagram and Letterboxd at Howdy Keenan.
Yeah, we got our listener group, Compelling Conversations. Go check that out and request to join, and we'll let you in here with us. Thank you so much to everyone who has shared the show by word of mouth or on social media, and a big thank you to everyone who has given us a 5-star ratings on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you listen to our show. We really appreciate that. It's going to help our little podcast grow and find more cool people like you. And if you haven't given us a 5-star ratings yet, why you do this?
Listener. Listener, why you do this? Why you do this to me?
Maybe that's how we can do it. We just guilt him.
Yeah, I guess so.
Into giving us a 5-star review. Huh?
But also, I'm in here, Damien.
No. That doesn't work.
You're probably wondering what this school did. This is how she threw me out the window.
It ruins the whole mood. It's like ice cream and curry. It doesn't work.
Independently, sure.
Sure.
Sure, right? Curry. Curry, yeah. Dennings.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Oh, that's a thought. Blah, blah, oh. I can only make noises like him. I can't actually say words.
Your cunting daughter.
Stolen crit. No, I can't. Bah. That I got down.
All
I can
right.
do that.
Great.
Yeah. Anyway, okay. All right. Keenan, are you thinking what I'm thinking?
I think I am, Lester.
Folks, until next time.
The power of the village people compels you. I'm seeing here 7 original members, but then I guess they've gone through a bunch of changes.
There was pride, there was lust.
Dopey, yeah. Doc. No, we have a cop / admiral / athlete / gigolo.
Wow.
Yeah, so I guess that eventually became the cop.
Yeah.
Native American, a GI, or a sailor. It should be a sailor. They're in the Navy,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, right. In the piglet. You can set your mind at ease.
In the piglet, you can murder Burke Dennings.
In the piglet. We want you. We want you. We want you as a new recruit.
We want you. Take me instead. Take me instead.
Yeah. Nacho, nacho, mama. Captain Howdy is nacho mama.
Don't listen to him, Damien. The devil is a liar. hey.
But wouldn't that drive you out of Reagan? It would bring us together. We will go our way. Together, we will leave someday. Together, your hand in my hands. Together, we will make our plan. And Karis is like, what are you doing? Just go with it. Sing with me. Together, we will fly so high. Together. From, I don't know that one.
I don't know that one.
It's a village, people.
The response, Damien, the response.
Oh, you're not fine. See, this is why I need Marin here. We did this all the time back in the day.